Strange Times in New Boston, Matt Crow, School Board Candidate Interview. Greetings and welcome to this special edition of Strange Times in New Boston. In this episode, I will be interviewing Matt Crow, candidate for New Boston School Board. New Boston is blessed with a great local paper, but there is only a limited amount of space that the paper can devote to covering candidates. Part of the purpose of this podcast is to provide an area for the long form of discussion better suited to exploring ideas that will never get the depth of coverage they deserve in print. At this time, I have Matthew Crow with me, so I would like the studio audience to welcome our guest. Welcome, Matthew Crow. Now, before we get into the school board stuff, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. My name's Matt Crow, and my wife, Elizabeth, and I live in New Boston. We've been living here for almost 20 years. We moved here in 2004. We have a older son who's out in the world making his own way, and we have a pair of young men at home, first and second grade, that are learning their way through the world as we speak.
Well, this is a great place to be a kid, I would imagine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kids are very involved in the local rec leagues. They're in Little League. I was actually one of the Little League coaches last year, so that was a lot of fun, especially because I knew very little, actually not much at all about baseball when we started, so that was a interesting learning curve for all of us at that point, but the kids did really well, and it was really more about just focusing on teaching them confidence and how to improve and how to be okay with losing and failing and making sure they were able to grow from each of those experiences.
That's good. That's good parenting, is being involved.
Yeah.
Do you want to give a shout out to the kids?
My sons, Alec and Axel, they're probably home driving their mother up the wall, or they're either doing that or they're being dead silent playing Legos.
So what do you do for work, Matthew?
My wife and I own a couple different companies. Primarily, we have a fundraising company that works on behalf of nonprofit organizations, mainly police, firefighter, first responder groups like that. We raise money on their behalf. We also have a real estate business, and I'm a fledgling audiobook narrator who is finally making money doing that after a couple of years doing that. So that's been quite a bit of fun sitting in a closet all day, kind of similar to what we're doing right now.
Oh, that's an interesting line of work. As you can see, I hate books. That's why the office may collapse at any moment from the weight of the bookshelves. Is there anything particular you'd like the listeners to know about yourself?
A lot of things, but mainly that I'm at a point in my life where it's kind of time to start giving back to the community. The boys are doing well, businesses are all going pretty strong, and I'm making the time to do this because I think the parents and the children have been the most ill-served by our school administration these past couple of years. Before that, I honestly didn't really pay a lot of attention, so I'm not sure how it was going before that. The pandemic brought a lot of things out into the light for a lot of people, but mainly for me, it's been how the schools across the country are really operating, creating more of a workforce of people that know just enough to get by, but not really enough to really go after the American dream. And I have experience with this because in my line of work, I employ a lot of late teen, early 20s individuals, and over the last 5 years have been pretty dismayed and confused about how a lot of them have gotten that far in life knowing so little. Even like knowing how to read sometimes. It's very disconcerting.
When you hear some of the statistics, it is absolutely amazing. At high schools graduating people who can't read at the first grade level, that
it's
is
terrible.
An absolute stain on our national
character. And then you have a whole generation of people now blaming the country for their life choices when in reality, they didn't really have a shot to begin with, it seems. I'd like to make sure that this current group of students in our school has the best opportunity to succeed, start their own businesses when they get older, become employers, and really live the American life like our founders intended again.
That's great. That's good to hear. We need people that care to be involved in our society to carry it forward.
Yep.
So given all that, I mean, you sound like a sensible person. Why on earth would you run for the school board?
Good question. I'm a glutton for punishment, apparently. My father and my mother were both teachers when I was growing up. I grew up in the Midwest, south of St. Louis, Missouri. Go Blues. Sorry, Bruins fans. My parents were both teachers. My stepmother was a teacher for kindergarten for a long time when after my parents were divorced. And my father was on the school board for pretty much the entire time I was in elementary, junior, and high school out there. And I kind of always thought it was a little odd that he always tried so hard to get reelected and was always kind of so involved. And I guess as a kid, you're maybe a little embarrassed of that. But I totally get it now because he was definitely doing that to make sure that, not just myself, but all the kids, my sister and all the other kids in the school, we're given the best chance, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, sure.
And I think that right now, my children, your children, and all the kids in the school need people on the school board that will not only hold the school administration and staff accountable, but also the teachers accountable for the children's academic achievement and giving the taxpayers here in town every single dollar's worth of good results.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a real background in education. You've seen it from the teacher side of it. One of the things I always thought was the teachers aren't getting rich,
right?
But, the education for our children is of primary importance to a lot of people.
My parents never did it for the money. They said they always tried to instill in my sister and I and even my step siblings with my stepmother, like I said, was a kindergarten teacher, that you teach because you care and to make sure that you always care.
Yeah, well, there's a reason it's a profession and not just a job.
Right, exactly.
So then you do have a particular interest in education. Is there any particular issue that motivated you to run for the board?
I've been back and forth on it quite a bit since the school decided to reopen remotely in the fall of 2020. My oldest son was just entering first grade, and he was doing it in the dining room on his little laptop. And thank God he had Mrs. Willard. What a angel she is on earth, helping these kids through all that. But just think of all that extra work that these teachers had to put up and do because of that. Teachers were going over and above, you know, realizing that it was really the adults in the room that were the most frightened of all of this. And unfortunately, the kids had to take the brunt of all of it. After they went hybrid, we continued to speak at almost every school board meeting to ask them to fully reopen. In fact, I started up a group of parents in town, the New Boston Reopen Coalition. We would just write letters, go to the meetings, and we would just continue and continue and continue to ask the board to reopen the school. What sense does it make to go to school twice a week and then have a Zoom day on Friday? It's kids were not getting much of an education. They did the best they could do. I'm not saying the teachers did poorly, but they did the best they could do in the situation. But the situation was created by the administration and the current school board.
Yeah, that we're the only school in SAU 19 that still has mandatory masking is hard to understand.
Correct. And then after they reopened in a hybrid model, that's when we started to kind of go after them on the masks. You know, take the masks off or let us at least choose if that's something that we'd like to have our kids do. This year, this current school year, my second son entered the first grade. We were realizing after a good 5 to 6 weeks, he was having a very difficult time, not just understanding his teacher, but also his peers. He has a speech impediment that was very difficult for him to form a couple different sounds. And to be able to do that properly, you have to be able to see people's mouth move when you speak. So variety of different circumstances led us to take our kids out of the school and put them into a homeschool program. Because we felt that they were not being served well. And honestly, we're lucky that we're able to do something like that. A whole lot of parents are not able to do that. So a lot of these parents in town, their children were dealing with the exact same thing. Unfortunately, they couldn't do a lot about it because of scheduling and things like that. So, and then to be honest, it just kept going and going, and we would keep talking to the school board. And then when the school board at the beginning of the year punted on Superintendent Balke's recommendation to open in a masks optional model, they continued to push it off week after week. They didn't vote on it. They finally voted on it like 4 days before the school year started. When hard choices needed to be made, they folded to the scared minority in town, and it was a minority. I mean, hundreds of parents do not want their kids mouths covered up for the same reasons that I'm talking about. You know, there's a lot of special needs education in this town, a lot of great teachers that deal with it, but a lot of these kids are being very ill served right now this way.
Yeah, I was very fortunate, and my child is very much a digital native and did okay with the remote learning, but I can't imagine if you didn't have that quality, his education would have been almost non-existent for 2 years.
Correct.
Okay, so moving on, let's talk about school funding and taxes. Okay. The school consumes the bulk of the taxes and is the primary asset of the town. Where do you stand on funding education?
Well, I'm not really in control. The school board's not in control, nor would I be on the board of how the schools are funded. That's really up to the legislature to decide. All that we can do is work within that law. As a taxpayer for almost 20 years in town, I see the same thing that we all do, continued increases year after year. And the interesting part is, if you really stop and think about it for a little bit, meaning consider it with no phones or kids running around or any kind of distractions, just thinking about this one thing, our town school scores are only a little bit above the state's average. In fact, the principal at the school deliberative session just four nights ago pointed out and seemed pretty impressed that that 52% of the third graders in the school are meeting the state assessments in English and language arts.
It's hard to imagine 52%.
52% when I was growing up was an F. I mean, I'm not sure what it is now, but you may not be aware of this, but if a child, third grade, is not able to read well by the third grade, their chances of dropping out of school increase fourfold. And again, why is that number impressive? Above average? If 58% of sixth graders in the same English and language arts standard impressive, it's not. When I was in school, like I said, those scores were Fs, failures. Just because we're above the state average, it's not anything to brag about, in my opinion. In fact, it points back to the workforce comment I made earlier. The standard assessments are set by people way above our school level. Just beating them is nothing to brag about. Our sixth grade kids are going into middle school. Think about this. Our sixth grade children are going into middle school with a 44% proficiency in math. That's unacceptable. People need to be held accountable for this type of return on tax dollar investment and for this unacceptable education experience for the kids. We should strive to be bringing the state average up in this town by having exceptional scores in all of these areas. But it's been the status quo for so long, it's going to be kind of tough to change, I think. But I intend on, if elected, I intend on starting a curriculum committee to help our teachers assist our students by first catching them up after 2 years of broken routine, anxiety, uncertainty, and honestly downright failure, to be honest, and hopefully kickstart these kids as they leave the elementary school with higher scores in these areas that they need so they can be exceptional kids, not just an average that is honestly, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, it is a very competitive world out there, and you're not just competing with people in the United States anymore. You're competing with people from overseas who have nothing to do but learn this, and that is absolutely the way the world is.
Reminding people real quick, like how averages work. So 58% assessment average. That means there are children who are way above it, but there's also kids that are way below that to bring that number down so low. Like think about that for a second. How many of these elementary school kids aren't able to read, write properly, or anywhere close to the state average, and thereby bringing the score down so low? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's terrible.
It's got to be a bell curve, right? That
absolutely.
There's people above it and below it. You hear the stories out of some of the larger states about people graduating from high school reading at the first grade level, and it is an absolute stain on our nation.
I see them when they come in to apply for work with me.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with somebody like that.
It's hard.
Hopefully you can train them. So every plan to significantly reduce costs at NBCS has so far floundered. Do you have any ideas about where cost savings might be achieved?
Well, this is another interesting part. Thanks for asking that. Without, you know, complete transparency to specific information in the line items that I'm the most interested in, like technology, food service, and staffing, no one is 100% certain, to be honest, until you really start digging into the budget. You have a finance committee and then five people on the board. Those are the only people in town that really know where the money's being spent. That said, I've been very, very good over the years in my business consulting business, dissecting budgets, finding ways to renegotiate expenses, et cetera, that I'm sure there's something that we can do to better use our tax dollars. I'd also, again, coming from a family of teachers, I'd like to find ways in there to move some money if we can that benefits the teachers in some way to help compensate them for the hundreds of extra hours of work per year they've had to do just because of decisions that their employer made the last 24 months. At some point, the employer has to improve staff, they have to improve morale, and they have to improve the overall for the employees so they can make a good product. And that product is our students' ability to kick ass when they get out of school.
Yeah, my sister was a teacher for many years, and the idea that they only put in a 40-hour week is absolutely nonsense.
It's insane.
Yeah, I find it very sad to see old folks forced to sell out and move out of the community because the taxes have exceeded what their fixed incomes can afford. Even if they get a good price for their property, it'd be nice to see people that have helped build our community be able to stay in it and live out their days here. Rising education taxes affects more than just workers. And with no commercial tax base, it all falls on the residential and renters in New Boston. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't disagree. I also don't know how to correct that issue. I know that 65% of the tax revenue in town is spent on the school. That's a lot of that's a lot of money. I think the budget's $17.5 million this coming year just for the students that are in town and then going out of town too. I'd love to find ways to bring the budget down. I don't know that that's possible. I think it's better at this point to find ways within the budget to make it as effective as we possibly can make it.
Well, that sounds like a good plan. Do you think there is any hope for the student and taxpayer to be at peace?
I don't know that they're at war. I think that the students are unfortunately the victims in this whole thing. It's not their fault. It's the administration's fault. It's the people, even above the school board over in the SAU. It's people need to be held accountable. They need to be held to account on all kinds of things, not just the education, where the money's being spent.
Okay. Yeah, it's a thorny issue, and I don't know that there's any solution out there on the horizon.
Yeah, it's tough.
So moving along, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about masks and COVID.
Oh boy, good.
Have you had COVID?
Yeah, we've all had COVID. Of course we've had COVID, of course.
Yeah, I wonder if I got it. We got sick for about 3 days in a really weird way. The whole family got it. And they don't really test you for if you've had it unless they catch it while you've got it.
Right. I think the antibody stuff is definitely something we should be doing instead of the frequent asymptomatic testing in the school.
Yeah, and just being generally healthy. If you're going to really have to look hard in the data to find a kid that died in the United States from COVID that wasn't already profoundly ill.
Agreed.
So do you think that the masks are effective at stopping the spread of COVID?
I do not, because I've wore a mask for 18 months and still got COVID twice.
Yeah.
My kids got COVID. They were wearing masks, not just at school, but everywhere else. I mean, we're all wearing masks. If you don't have them, you know, correctly fitted, they don't work. I think they're more of a visual display that we're all trying to do something to help each other out, which, again, I'm not knocking. I just think it's not really necessary at this point in the game. It's been 2 years. It's going to be endemic. It's going to be here forever. We never mask for any other types of virus or any other types of illnesses that went around. We should not be continuing it here at this point now that we know what it is and have a high population of the percentage, high percentage of the population vaccinated.
So yeah, I think that endemic is the key word there. COVID is just going to become like the common cold or the flu.
Dr. Fauci said so.
So do you think COVID has become endemic? That is, that COVID's just going to become another common cold or flu?
Yeah, like I said, Dr. Fauci's mentioned the same exact thing recently. It's been talked about a lot. We're going to have to live with it at this point. States around the country, even ours, are starting to operate from a model that this is going to be something that reoccurs, and now we just have to learn how to live within it.
Yeah, well, I'm still a holdout for the Swedish model. I don't think we should have shut down at all.
Agreed.
Do you think there's a price our children are paying for the 2 year period of masking? It sounds like from your own family's experience, you would agree with that.
100%. I mean, there's so many things to talk about with this topic. Let's start with an 800% increase nationwide in ER visits for mental health issues between children from the ages of 5 to 17. You could start with a 50% increase in suicide attempts in young women between the ages of 12 and 17. You can start with 23% loss in cognition through pandemic-related procedures in elementary school kids from the ages of 5 to 17. It's insane.
That sounds pretty insane.
And what is it all for? To make the teachers healthier? They're vaccinated. They wear their masks. They're fine. It's not for that. It's because the school is trying to do, quote fingers, something to make sure everybody thinks that they're doing something to prevent the spread. When at this point, it's honestly, in my opinion, continuing to mask the kids is the same as basically child abuse.
Yeah, I think the science is really clear at this point that we have a leaky vaccine. That is, an inoculated individual can still catch and transmit the virus, even if they don't get very sick from it. Children are the least affected of any demographic, and given that you are really going to have to look hard for kids in the data that died in the USA that weren't already profoundly ill, do you think we can return at least the kids to normalcy safely?
Well, I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I don't pretend to play one. I don't really want to get into whether or not I think it works. I did check this morning on the way here, and I did notice that there's only 174 COVID hospitalizations in New Hampshire today. That was down from over 390 just 3 weeks ago. With 80% of our population here in the state vaccinated at this point, that means the majority of those hospitalizations are fully up to date. So that speaks for itself, if you ask me. But anytime you start throwing facts like that around, all you're met with is that you're a COVID denier or an anti-vax or some other foolishness, and it's just not the case.
Following the science is racist.
Absolutely.
If you are elected to the board, will you sustain the policy of mandatory masking?
So for everybody in the back, absolutely not. Day one, that's going to be the fight, and it'll end quickly, to be honest, if I'm elected with Nicole Treat. We both are completely for parental choice. I'm not saying we're going to ban masks. That would be the exact same thing as making everybody wear them. Removing choice has been the fight this entire time. We're 100% for parental choice, parental rights when it comes to your health decisions, and we are both 100% on the side of the students in this. The kids hate them. I know that from my own experience, not just with my kids, but with the Little League team last year. We had to wear masks the first couple practices, and they were complaining constantly. It got to the point where I just told them to take them off. Nobody said anything. But you hear teachers on the school board meetings or parents that write in or staff that get up and speak, and they say the kids don't mind them. The kids don't care. Kids, if they're raised half well, all have the respect for teachers and are not going to come right out and say, no, I don't like it, especially if the one asking them is a teacher wearing an improperly fitted N95 mask with a face shield on. They don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to get ridiculed. They don't want to be thought of as some child that's going to cause a scene. That's what I'm here for. That's what the parents are for. We fight for the kids because we know how they feel. We deal with it every day. We know that this is all just a farce at this point. Teachers out of school are seen all the time without masks on. Same with staff. Same with board members. Yet once inside the building, it's a big show to make the kids learn how to comply, and I'm not having it anymore. I haven't been having it since the fall of 2020, and you'll see in a few weeks how many parents in this town have had it also when Nicole and I are elected to correct these foolish policies.
Yeah, I think that the people have weighed in and that they're ready to be done with all this.
Absolutely.
So do you think there are health implications for children if we don't return them to an unmasked condition?
So let's pretend that they just stay masked for the rest, forever, because COVID is always going to be around, or the flu, or next thing you know, it'll be the cold. We need to mask from the cold. Or Ivy League Brown University just released a month ago a controlled group study. By the way, there is no control group study that shows masks are effective, just FYI, not one. They released a control group study that shows a 23% decline in cognition and IQ from kids between the ages of 5 and 17. I mentioned that earlier, but I'm bringing it back up again. Think about this to illustrate that mentally. Think of it like an Olympic track race, where all of a sudden the best athletes in the world perform 23% worse. They go from an Olympic record track athlete to a guy like me playing pickup basketball in talent level. That's a 23% decrease is insane, and we should not be tolerating this kind of decline in our children's abilities to not just succeed now, but down the road when they grow up. What's going to happen in 11 years, which is what the Surgeon General said, he said it takes 11 years for mental health issues to fully come out in people. 11 years from now, what are we going to be dealing with for all these kids that have been forced into this scared mindset, not just by their parents, but by people on television, by their teachers, by their church leaders, even right here in town? It is out of control, and it needs to end. Face masks do nothing. This is not my entire platform, but I am very passionate about this. They do nothing but force these children to learn how to comply, and that's all they're for.
Wow, those are some strong words. So I've got to ask this. Do you think this issue has been manipulated for political reasons? Just over 2 years ago, a certain group of people said they would not trust any vaccine developed by the previous administration. Now the same group supports jailing and denying services to people who remain unvaccinated. Do you find that ironic?
I find it ridiculous. To answer the first part of that, I mean, what's not politicized nowadays? And it's terribly sad that every single thing has to turn into some kind of a political discussion. It's just nuts. But I find it all ridiculous. Here's an example of what's going on for people listening, and forward this to anybody that you know that might be interested in this. Here's an example that hits right here in town. If a child in our school right now, his name is Bobby, and he's in second grade. He tests positive for COVID. He's out of school for 5 days. Then he has to come back and wear a mask, like that does anything, like we already talked about. It doesn't do anything except ostracize them and make them feel like a sick subhuman for another 5 days. But if a household contact of that same child Bobby, I'm just using Bobby as a generalized term, if a household contact of that child is asymptomatic and vaccinated, they can go back to school. But if the household contact isn't vaccinated, they're sent home for 10 to 15 days. And it's hard to say the exact number because they aren't even really following the policies that are in writing right now. And they're asymptomatic. They're not even sick. And these kids, a contact of the sick person, well, the person that has COVID, who knows how sick they are, a contact, an asymptomatic one, is now booted out of school for up to 15 days, even if it's just 10. That's insane. It really is insane. When I grew up in school, kids got suspended from school for 5 days for a fist fight. Asymptomatic kids now are basically suspended for 200 to 300% longer because their parents made a medical choice not to vaccinate. So I disagree with any kind of segregation. I 100% disagree with all of this. It's just nuts. Basically, the kids are being punished. The parents are being punished for not doing what the media has been telling them to do. It's insane. It's immoral. It's unconstitutional. Like I said, I'm not going to stand for it. If we're elected, all of these quarantine policies are going to go right back to what they were in 2019. If you're sick, you keep your kid home. If your kid's sick, you keep your kid home. And if everybody's feeling okay, they go to school and they get an education like we used to do 25 months ago.
Yeah, I really decry that one of the first casualties of the COVID pandemic was nuance in argument, and there's no room now that it's so sided up that even if you want to say that hey, maybe there is something good about one policy or another, you can't say it if your side doesn't go against
it. Absolutely.
The culture of safetyism has run amok on this too. Exactly. There are bad trends in the U.S. already with the culture of safetyism and the kid on the milk carton kind of parent, and this has just made all of them just go crazy, it seems like. So moving along, let's talk about critical race theory and racist ideologies. So a little background. One of the recent controversies has been over the Right to Freedom from Discrimination in Public Workspaces and Education section of House Bill 2 from 2021. This bill started life as House Bill 544, sponsored by New Boston's own Representative Keith Ammon, but it died on the table in the House. The essential idea, however, was picked up by the Senate and ultimately added to House Bill 2 and passed as part of that legislation. My first thought on seeing the text was disbelief that this wasn't already illegal, that the state might want the power to teach or instruct one group that they were inherently inferior or superior is sobering.
It's a little shocking to me that legislation had to be created to prevent the teachings that one group of people are inferior or superior to another simply by the color of their skin or their political beliefs or religious beliefs. It's really surprising that that's even something that we had to actually legislate. The fact that people were being taught that to begin with, you're teaching white children or black children who have absolutely nothing to do with any of this stuff, that they're inferior to the other group or superior to the other group or they're privileged because of the color. It's surprising that we actually got to a point in schools where this had to actually be legislated. I mean, we're all people, we're all human beings. We should be able to get along and realize that, you know, mistakes a long time ago definitely happened, but that was hundreds of years ago and we've learned since then. And it's not like that now. And to teach children just kind of keeps to perseverate on the racism this long into it is just, it's shocking.
Yeah, there's a quote out there that the way to stop talking about race so much is to stop talking about race so much.
I mean, seriously.
Let me make sure I understand you, though. Are you saying that the state should not be able to instruct state employees and children in theories of racial supremacy? What kind of world are you suggesting we live in?
No, I'm not suggesting that the state should be teaching kids anything like that at all. In fact, the teacher should be teaching the children, not the state at all.
So let's move on. Another topic that is current in education today is New Hampshire Education Freedom Accounts. For those of you who don't know, these are accounts that allow a family making 300% or less of the poverty line to direct some of their child's state education funding to pay for the tuition at the school of their choice. Thus, a poor child going to an underperforming inner city school would be free to move to a school that had a more illustrious academic record. Do you find that allowing poor families to escape from failing schools is a problem?
No, I think it's great. Right here in town, I don't think we have any, if there's probably only a couple families that are probably even taking advantage of this. But for someone who's living in a city like Manchester or Nashua, and they decided their child's not getting a good education and they want to move their kid across town to the other elementary school or the other high school or maybe even go to Bedford, I mean, I fully support their ability to do so, because they're making the choice, the parent is making the choice for their child, how they'd like their child educated and the level of education they'd like them to have. And they should be fully in charge of that kind of decision. And I think it's great that the House legislated this and has allowed parents to use a very small portion of that money to do so.
All right, now, are you sure you wouldn't rather just force poor families to school their children in failing schools? Come on, man.
Well, you know, back to the workforce statement earlier, that's what's being done. I think that's one of the reasons why this went into effect. Kids, regardless of their parents' regardless of their parents' income level, should all have the same opportunity to succeed. And I think that I think it's great that they're able to do so with this.
So you're going on the record then as not hating poor people?
I love all people.
Oh, that's good. That's a good attitude. While the school board is a nonpartisan election, would you like to say anything to the listeners about your personal politics?
Up until about 8 years ago, I was a registered independent. I'm currently a registered Republican because I think the Democrat policies have gone out just way beyond the pale, way too far left from my comfort level. I'm a conservative by nature. I tend to keep my life private. I don't want the government involved in my life. I want to make sure my tax dollars are fiscally spent, and I want to make sure that I have every opportunity to be successful in the world. And I don't like to have a lot of government interference in that.
You sound like a member of the Just Leave Me Alone coalition.
I've been a Leave Me Aloner since I was about 10.
Very good. Now, this is the part of the interview where I really grill you.
Oh, boy.
So get ready for this.
All right.
I have two special questions that may or may not be from members of my family. I asked my sixth grader what I should ask people running for the school board, and he responded with, "How far away is the sun?" Yeah, don't worry. I will punish him later for his impertinence. Hmm. It must come from his mother's side. Any response?
I'm trying to remember what Captain Kirk said. I think it's 93 million miles, give or take a few thousand.
Wow.
I think that's close.
That's close enough for science in this house. Now, I asked my wife what I should ask people running for the school board, and she responded with, "What is your bedtime?" This is an obvious reference to her displeasure at the long hours some school board meetings consumed.
Oh, good one. Yeah, my bedtime's around 10:30 at night. Every single night. And if I'm out in public, as my wife is wont to tell you, if you get her talking about me for more than a minute, I'm pretty good at falling asleep anytime, anywhere after 10:30 in the evening. Even standing up one.
Well, you might have to extend that a little bit. Maybe. For some of those long, long board meetings.
We'll see how it goes.
And finally, is there anything you would like to say to the good citizens of New Boston?
If you're unhappy with the way the current school board has handled the last couple of years, you're not alone. You should be casting your vote for myself and for Nicole Treat. We will make sure that the parents in this town have a voice, are heard. And parents from all political affiliations and all problems and all levels of income, everybody. We are here to solve problems, to make sure that our kids have the best opportunity to succeed moving forward, and to make sure that the school, its staff, and also the teachers are held to account for the performance of the school.
Well, with that, thank you, Matthew Crow, for joining us today.
Thank you. Pause. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Good luck to you and your bid for the New Boston school seat.
Thanks.
Remember, listeners, all that is required for evil to prosper is for good people to do nothing. Don't forget to vote on March 8, 2022. I will say that again. Vote on Tuesday, March 8, 2022. Vote for the kids. Vote for freedom.
Vote for Matt Crow and Nicole Treat.
There you go. If you have any comments or questions about this podcast, please send them to me at strangetimesinnewboston, all one word, at hushmail.com. Live free or die.